Time Radio Hour. I'm your host, Justine Ward, and each week we bring you a classic show from radio's golden age. We have more holiday entertainment this week with Laurence Olivier as Ebenezer Scrooge, Frank Sinatra, and an Armed Forces Radio Christmas special with the Andrews Sisters and Bob Hope. First, we have Theatre Royal, a high-quality dramatic show sponsored by NBC. In this adaptation of Charles Dickens' A Christmas Carol, Laurence Olivier is your host and also stars as Ebenezer Scrooge. Enjoy Theatre Royal, A Christmas Carol, first broadcast December 24th, 1953 on NBC.
The National Broadcasting Company presents transcribed Sir Laurence Olivier as your narrator and in the role of Scrooge in Charles Dickens' immortal story, A Christmas Carol.
This is Laurence Olivier. Over 100 years ago, in December 1843, Charles Dickens wrote this story. Since then, each year, countless millions have listened to or read what has become the world's most famous Christmas tale. The London from which I speak to you today differs in many ways, but in many other ways is much the same as the town Charles Dickens wrote about and loved so well. It still has its rain and fog, its sudden sharp spells of bright, frosty weather, its warm, lovable people, and above all, its spirit. That spirit immortalized forever as a Dickens Christmas. Listen then, in a moment, to his tale, A Christmas Carol. Marley was dead to begin with, dead as a doornail. There was no doubt whatever about that. The register of his burial had been signed by Scrooge himself, and his name was good for anything that he chose to put his hand to. Old Marley was as dead as a doornail. But first let me tell you about Scrooge himself. Oh, but he was a tight-fisted hand of the grindstones, he was. A squeezing, wrenching, grasping, scraping, clutching, covetous old sinner. The cold within him froze his old features, nipped his pointed nose, shriveled his cheek, and stiffened his gait. He iced the office of his counting house in the hot days, and he certainly didn't thaw it 1 degree at Christmas.
Merry Christmas, Uncle. God save you.
Ah, humbug.
Christmas a humbug, Uncle? You don't mean that, I'm sure.
I do. Merry Christmas. What right have you to be merry? You're poor enough.
Don't be angry, Uncle. Tomorrow is Christmas Day. Come and dine with
us. I see you're far enough. Good afternoon.
But why not? We've never had any quarrel, to which I've been a party.
Good afternoon.
Well, you'll be very welcome. Merry Christmas, Uncle.
Ah! Good afternoon.
At least Scrooge's nephew found his Christmas greetings cordially returned by Scrooge's clerk, Bob Cratchit, even though he was freezing to death in his unheated corner of the office and earned only 15 shillings a week. In showing the young man out, however, Bob Cratchit let 2 other people in. They were portly gentlemen and greeted Scrooge in a friendly way.
Ah, this festive season of the year, Mr. Scrooge. We'd like to make some provision for the poor and destitute. Many thousands are in want of common necessaries.
Are there no prisons?
Oh, plenty of prisons.
And the union workhouses, are they still in operation?
Oh, yes, indeed. But many can't go there, and many would rather die.
If they'd rather die, then they'd better do it and decrease the surplus population.
Oh.
Good afternoon.
Oh.
That was the way that Scrooge felt on Christmas Eve. At length, the hour of shutting up his counting house arrived. With an ill will, he dismounted from his stool and tacitly admitted the fact to his clerk, Bob Cratchit.
You want the day off tomorrow, I suppose.
If quite convenient.
It's not convenient, and it is not fair. If I was to stop half a crown for it, you'd think yourself ill-used, I'll be bound.
Well, it's only once a year, sir.
Bah! Humbug!
Scrooge went off to his melancholy dinner in his usual melancholy tavern, and having read all the newspapers, went home to his bed. His house was old and dreary, for nobody lived in it but Scrooge, the other rooms being all let out as offices. As he opened the door, he suddenly started, for the door knocker seemed to leer at him through the fog, and the face of the knocker had changed to the face of his one-time partner, Jacob Marley. And Jacob Marley had been dead as a doornail for 7 years. Scrooge hurried up to his room and locked the door behind him.
Gracious me, what's that? All the bells ringing this time of night?
The clanking of heavy chains up the stairs, along the passage to the locked door of his room. A ghostly figure suddenly appearing through the door and standing there in front of him. No need to ask who it was. It was the ghost of Jacob Marley. Marley in his pigtail, usual waistcoat, tights and boots, clasping a chain about his middle, a chain made up of cash boxes, keys, padlocks, and heavy purses wrought in steel. But a Jacob Marley that was transparent.
In life, I was your partner, Jacob Marley.
You are fettered. What is that chain you bear?
I wear the chain I forged in life. I made it link by link and yard by yard, and of my own free will I bore it. Would you know the weight and length of the chain you bear yourself? It was full as heavy and as long as this, 7 Christmas Eves ago, and you have labored on it ever since.
Jacob, speak comfort to me, Jacob.
I have none to give. I am here tonight to warn you that you have yet a chance and hope of escaping my fate, Ebenezer.
You were always a good friend to me, Jacob. Thank you.
You will be haunted by 3 spirits.
Haunted? I think I'd rather not be, Jacob.
Without their visits, you cannot hope to shun the path I tread. Expect the first one tomorrow when the bell tolls 1.
Couldn't I take them all at once and have it over, Jacob?
Expect the second on the next night at the same hour. The third upon the next night when the last stroke of 12 has ceased to vibrate. Look to see me no more, and look that for your own sake you remember what has passed between us.
The spectre vanished. In fear and trembling, Scrooge undressed and went to bed. By the time he had fallen asleep, it was past 2 o'clock in the morning. When he woke, it was still pitch dark, but he heard the clock of a neighboring church distinctly striking 12. 12? Midnight? But heavens above, he'd slept the clock round almost twice. It was tomorrow night already, and when the clock chimed the next hour, the first of the 3 spirits would appear. Scrooge lay there in his bed in the dark and waited, considering that he could no more go to sleep than go to heaven. Suddenly, the curtains of his bed were drawn aside, and Scrooge, starting up in his bed, found himself face to face with the unearthly visitor who drew them back.
Are you this spirit, sir, whose coming was foretold to me?
I am.
Who and what are you?
I am the ghost of Christmas Park. Rise and come with me.
It was a strange figure that led him out into the night, clad in his slippers, dressing gown, and nightcap. A figure like a child, yet not so like a child as like an old man shrunk to the size of a child. It wore a tunic of the purest white and carried a branch of fresh green holly in his hand. But the strangest thing about it was that from the crown of its head there sprung a bright, clear jet of light, which was probably why it used in its duller moments a great extinguisher for a cap, which it carried the rest of the time under its arm.
Why, I know this place. I was a boy here. And that house there, it's where I went to school.
Strange that you have forgotten it for so long. The school is not quite deserted. A solitary child is still there, neglected by his friends.
Is it me?
It was you, but listen.
Dear, dear brother, I've come to bring you home for Christmas.
Home?
Yes, home for good and all. Home forever and ever. Father's so much kinder than he used to be, but home's like heaven. Last night he said you might come home and sent me in a coach to bring you, and we're to have the merriest time in all the world.
My little sister. She had a large heart. Poor little sister.
She died a woman and had children, I believe.
One child.
True. He is your nephew.
Once more, the spirit led him away. Back through the night into the city they had left. It was plain enough by the brightly lit shop windows that it was Christmas time again. They stopped before a warehouse door.
Why, that's old Fezziwig's place, where I was apprenticed. And dear old Fezziwig, bless his heart, alive again.
Yo-ho there, Ebenezer. Dick, no more work tonight. It's Christmas Eve, young Ebenezer. Let's have the shutters up before a man can say Jack Robinson. Hilly-ho, clear away, my lads. Hilly-ho, Dick. Cheer up, Ebenezer.
All was done in a moment. Everything moved out of the way, the floor swept and watered, the lamps trimmed, fuel heaped on the fire, and the warehouse turned into as snug and warm a ballroom as you could desire to see on a winter's night.
A small matter to make these silly folks so full of gratitude.
Small?
Why, isn't it? He's only spent some £3 or £4 of your mortal money. Does that deserve such praise?
It isn't that, Spirit. He had the power to make us happy or unhappy, to make our service a pleasure or a toil. Oh, dear.
What's the matter?
Nothing particular. I should just like to be able to say a word or two to my clerk just now, Bob Cratchit.
There is. Remove me from this place.
These are the shadows of things that have been. If they are what they are, don't blame me.
Remove me. I cannot bear it. Take me back. Haunt me no longer.
The flame that burned so bright upon the spirit of Christmas past was more than Scrooge could bear. Seizing the large extinguisher that it carried, Scrooge pressed it violently down upon the spirit's head. But though he pressed it down with all his force, he could not hide the light which streamed in an unbroken flood upon the ground. Suddenly he realized that he was back in his own bedroom. He gave the extinguisher a final squeeze, reeled across to his bed, and sank into a heavy sleep. Awaking in the middle of a prodigiously tough snore, and sitting up in bed to get his thoughts together, Scrooge did not need to be told that the bell was again upon a stroke of one. He felt that it was restored to consciousness in the nick of time for the special purpose of holding a conference with the second messenger dispatched to him through Jacob Marley's intervention. But this time he did not wait for the spectre to do it. He drew back the curtains of his bed himself. Being prepared for almost anything, Scrooge was by no means prepared for nothing. He lay there trembling in the dark until he noticed the light which shone beneath the door of his sitting room. He got up softly and shuffled in his slippers towards the chink.
Come in, my good fellow. I am the ghost of Christmas presents. Look upon me.
Scrooge reverently did so. In easy state upon his couch, there sat a jolly giant, glorious to see, who bore a glowing torch, in shape not unlike Plenty's horn, which shed its light throughout the room. But what a room it had become! The walls hung with mistletoe and holly, a mighty blaze roaring up the chimney, and the floor heaped up with turkeys, geese, great joints of meat, mince pies, plum puddings, barrels of oysters, and seething bowls of punch.
Spirit, conduct me where you will. I went forth last night on compulsion, and I learned a lesson which is working now. Tonight, if you have aught to teach me, let me profit by it.
Then touch my robe.
Holly, mistletoe, turkeys, and plum puddings all vanished instantly, and out into the night they flew over the twinkling lights of the great city. It was a remarkable quality of the ghost that, notwithstanding his gigantic size, he could accommodate himself to any place with ease, and that he stood beneath a low roof quite as gracefully as in a lofty hall, which was just as well, for in a moment they were standing there in the dining room of Scrooge's clerk, Bob Cratchit, and his family.
Merry Christmas, all.
Merry Christmas. Now then, Belinda, take Tiny Tim and Martha and show them what they're going to eat for dinner. If that doesn't make their mouths water, nothing will. And how did little Tim behave at church, my dear?
As good as gold and better. He told me coming home that he hoped the people saw him in church because he was a cripple and it might be pleasant to them to remember upon Christmas Day who made lame beggars walk and blind men see.
The poor little mite. How good he is. Come along, all of you. Dinner's nearly ready, I'll be bound.
A Merry Christmas to us all, my dears. God bless us.
God bless us, everyone.
Spirit, Tiny Tim is a cripple and so very pale and sickly. Tell me if he will live.
I see a vacant seat in the chimney corner, and a crutch without an owner carefully preserved. If these shadows remain unaltered by the future, the child will die.
No, no. Oh, no, kind spirit. Say he will be spared.
Why should he be? If he dies, it will decrease the surplus population.
Now then, one and all, I give you a toast. Mr. Scrooge, the founder of the feast.
The founder of the feast, indeed. I wish I had him here.
Oh, my dear, the children, and it's Christmas Day.
Oh, well, for your sake and the day's, then, not for his. A Merry Christmas to him. He'll be very merry, I'll be bound.
Oh, that's better, my dear. To Mr. Scrooge.
Oh, Mr. Scrooge.
I never knew that people could be so happy. But, Spirit, you're looking sad and old. Your hair has turned white.
Oh, it is nearly midnight, when I shall die and become myself no more than a shadow.
Who are those unhappy, frightened, cowering children there in rags behind you? Are they yours, Spirit?
They are mankind's. Their names are Ignorance and Want. Beware of them, for they are vicious.
Have they no refuge or resource?
Are there no prisons? Are there no workhouses? Oh. Farewell.
The spirit of Christmas present had vanished. In its place there stood the last of Scrooge's three expected visitors, the ghost of Christmas yet to come. It was shrouded in a deep black garment which concealed its face, its form, and left nothing of it visible save one outstretched hand. But unlike the other spirits, this one spoke never a word.
Ghost of the future, I fear you more than any other specter I have seen. But as I know your purpose is to do me good, and as I hope to live to be another man from what I was, lead on.
Again the scene had changed. And now Scrooge found himself in the room of death itself. A pale light, rising from the outer air, fell straight upon the bed, and on it, plundered and bereft, unwatched, unwept, uncared for, was the body of a man. A filthy old sheet lay over the face, and the phantom motioned to Scrooge to draw it back.
No, no, I dare not. This is a fearful place. In leaving it, I shall not leave its lesson, believe me, Spirit. Let me see some tenderness connected with the death. Please, I beg you, Spirit.
Poor little Tiny Tim. You went today again, Robert?
Yes, my dear. I wish you could have gone. It would have done you good to see how green a place it is, but you'll see it often. I promised him that I would walk there on a Sunday. Poor Tiny Tim, my little child.
Poor little Tiny Tim. If only I'd known, Spectre. Something tells me our parting moment is at hand. I know it, but I know not how. Tell me, what man was that whom we saw there lying dead? A gravestone? Before I read the name upon it, Spectre, answer me one question. Are these the shadows of the things that will be, or are they shadows of the things that may be only? You do not answer, only point. And I must read the name upon this grave. Ebenezer Scrooge. No, Spirit, no, no. Spirit, hear me. I'm not the man I was. I'll not be the man I must have been but for this intercourse. Why show me this if I'm past all hope? Good Spirit, assure me that I may yet change these shadows you have shown me by an altered life. I will honor Christmas in my heart and try to keep it all the year. I will live in the past, the present, and the future. The spirits of all three shall strive within me. I will not shut out the lessons that they teach. Oh, tell me I may sponge away the writing on this stone.
and holding up his hands in one last prayer to have his fate reversed, Scrooge saw an alteration in the phantom's hood and dress. It shrunk, collapsed, and dwindled down to a bedpost. Yes, and the bedpost was his own. The bed was his own, the room was his own. A bright, shining morning, and the bells of the town pealing out there beyond his window. Oh, how long have they been sleeping?
What day of the month is it? Hey! What's today, my fine young fellow?
Today? Why, Christmas Day.
Christmas Day? I haven't missed it. The spirits have done it all in one night after all. Hello, then.
Hello.
Do you know the poulterers in the next street? No, of course you do, an intention boy. Well, do you know whether they sold the big prize turkey they had there yesterday night?
It's hanging there now, mister.
It is? Then go and buy it. Here's a shilling. Come back with the man. Half a crown for you if you have that turkey in less than 5 minutes.
Right.
I'll send it to Bob Cratchit's, and he shan't know who sent it. It's twice the size of Tiny Tim. Too big for the boy to carry it there? Well, let him take a cab. Half a crown for the cabby and another shilling for the boy and his trouble. What is the name of the man who came round asking for a subscription? Well, I'll soon find out. And £100 for the poor when I do. No. Better make it 100 guineas. Only anonymously. Gracious! Look at the time, and I haven't yet shaved. I must hurry, or I'll be late for that wonderful dinner with nephew Fred and his wife. I'll be round there in a twinkling, and won't they be surprised when I burst in shouting, "A Merry Christmas, everyone!" And won't Bob Cratchit be surprised tomorrow when I'm waiting for him there at the office and raise his wages on the spot? Oh, goodness, what have I done with my life till now? Was ever such a wonderful time of the year as Christmas?
Scrooge had no further need of intercourse with the spirit, but lived upon the total abstinence principle ever afterwards. And it was always said of him that he knew how to keep Christmas well if any man alive possessed that knowledge. May that truly be said of us and all of us. And so, as Tiny Tim observed,
God bless us, everyone!
This is Laurence Olivier again, speaking to you from London on Christmas Eve. Each of us here in the studio joins with me in wishing you a very happy Christmas. And in the words of Tiny Tim himself, God bless us, everyone.
Laurence Olivier was heard in the role of Scrooge and was your narrator in this adaptation of Charles Dickens' A Christmas Carol. The script was by Derek Patmore and the music was under the direction of Sidney Torch. This was an NBC presentation, transcribed in London, produced and directed by Harry Allen Towers.
You're listening to the Old Time Radio Hour, broadcast each week over the World Wide Web with your host, Justine Ward. Next, we have a 15-minute musical program sponsored by the U.S. government to sell savings bonds. Frank Sinatra made his Christmas appearance on this show along with operatic soprano Dorothy Kirsten. Guest star, first broadcast December 25th, 1949, and syndicated by the U.S. Treasury.
United States Treasury Department presents Guest Star with Frank Sinatra and Dorothy Kirsten. you do, ladies and gentlemen. This is Don Wilson introducing Guest Star, a transcribed feature for savings bonds presented by this station as a public service. May it serve to remind you that the future belongs to those who prepare for it. Make your future secure through the regular purchase of United States savings bonds, the world's finest investment. Our special holiday week broadcast of Guest Star features the music of Jeff Alexander with his orchestra and chorus, and presents as its special guests the twin stars of Light Up Time, lovely Dorothy Kirsten, and our holiday host, Frank Sinatra.
Thank you, Don, and hello, friends. It's always a pleasure to be with you on the Guest Star series. And today's program is especially important to me because it marks the third straight year in which I've appeared on the Christmas week broadcast. And Dorothy and Jeff Alexander and I have planned a show playing it safe all the way, strictly loaded with favorites and fun to do. And we shall start off with me playing the part of the little man in the weather barometer. I pop out of the house with frost on my beard and predict light snow, followed by lighter music. Sleigh bells ring, are you listening? In a lane, snow is glistening. A beautiful sight, we're happy tonight. Walking in a winter wonderland. Gone away is the bluebird. Here to stay is a new bird. He sings a love song as we go along, walking in the winter wonderland. In the meadow we can build a snowman, then pretend that he is Parson Brown. He'll say, are you married? We'll say, no, man. But you can do the job when you're in town. Later on, we'll conspire as we dream by the fire to face unafraid the plans that we made walking in the winter wonderland. Walking in the winter wonderland. Well, Dorothy, what do you think? Does that get us off on the right foot?
Well, it's perfect, Frank. The only trouble is I got a wet foot in that last snowdrift. The one just this side of Parson Brown.
Well, then step aside, my dear, and I shall shovel a pathway to your next song. Neighbors, our lovely ladybird, Dorothy Kirsten, sings The Maids of Cadiz.
Votre chemin poussé.
That's wonderful, Dorothy. It's as gay and as heartwarming as this Christmas season itself.
Thank you, Frank, but maybe it's just the season.
Not entirely, D.K. Of course, there is something about holiday time that makes you feel kind of warm inside. It's probably because the holidays mean home and comfort and security.
And they mean something else, too. The feeling of thanksgiving that we all experience. Thanksgiving for the blessings of the year just past, and for the good things that lie ahead.
That's right, Dorothy. And among those good things, nothing is more important than peace of mind. The knowledge that our families are safe and secure. Families that own savings bonds have that sense of security. They know that they are ready for any financial emergency. They know that someday those bonds can buy the important things. Things maybe like a home or a business of their own, or a college education for their kids. Savings bonds are safe, they're sound, and they're profitable.
They certainly are. They pay back $4 for every $3 invested in just 10 short years. Yes, friends, I think that Frank and I agree. At holiday time or in any other season, savings bonds are the finest investment in the world.
And now, Dorothy, how about something on the romantic side? This is the season for that, too, you know.
As what season isn't? Well, I can't think of anything more appropriate to that subject than the lovely song by Rodgers and Hart, My Romance.
The very thing. Prithee join me, will you?
Love to.
My romance doesn't have to have a moon in the sky.
My romance doesn't need a blue lagoon standing by.
No month of May, no twinkling stars,
no hideaway, no soft guitar.
My romance doesn't need a castle rising in Spain,
nor a dance to a constantly surprising refrain.
Wide awake, I can make my most fantastic dreams come true. My romance doesn't need thing but you. Friends, a year is ending and a new one is beginning. And burdened though we may be, discouraged with our failures, bogged down with the cares of everyday living, still we can take heart in this blessed season. One little truth can help us along. A simple phrase in a childhood poem. God's in his heaven, all's right with the world. Thy kingdom come.
Give us this day. Forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom and the power and the glory forever.
Been listening to Guest Star, a special program of music for the holidays presented on transcription by this station as a public service. To our stars, Frank Sinatra and Dorothy Kirsten, and to Jeff Alexander, his orchestra and chorus, our thanks for a great show. We'll have another of your favorite stars to entertain you, and we hope you'll be on hand. Meanwhile, this is Don Wilson saying so long and wishing you all the best for the new year. Make it a happy and secure one through the regular purchase of United States savings bonds, the finest investment in the world.
Here's a treat for the GIs fighting World War II. An Armed Forces Radio Service special sent to troops around the world to spread hope and good cheer. Bob Hope, the Andrews Sisters, and Linda Darnell entertain the troops with a wonderful variety show. Enjoy the AFRS Christmas special, first broadcast Christmas Day 1945 over AFRS.
All you men in the armed forces of the United Nations, here's a special Christmas package.
Oh, come on, ye faithful, joyful and triumphant. Oh, come ye, oh, come ye, to Bethlehem.
Hi, you guys and gals everywhere, and Merry Christmas to you. This is Linda Darnell, filling in for Santa Claus and getting ready to untie a ribbon on a great big package of entertainment addressed to each and every one of you and marked Do Not Open Till Christmas. It's chock full of greetings in word and song from some of your favorite entertainers with a special message from the Chief of Chaplains for the Army and for the Navy. Right now, gang, let's tear off the gift wrapping and see what's inside. Pencil and let's make some room here, because right at the top of your Christmas box are the Andrews Sisters, here to send their very best Christmas greetings. And how are they going to do that? Well, of course, they're going to sing.
Oh,
As the andiron old Saint Nick leans his bag on when he brushes the cinders out of his beard after coming down the chimney. Well, you know, fellas, Christmas calls for a lot of things. Good fellowship, hospitality, and fun. But for a moment, with the finer implications of Christmas, we go to our nation's capital, Washington, where you will hear a special Christmas message from the Navy's Chief of Chaplains, Captain Robert D. Workman. Go ahead, Washington, and Captain Workman.
The chaplains of the Navy Department join with others here in Washington in sending special, individual Christmas greetings to you, the men and women of the Army, Navy, Marine Corps, and Coast Guard. This Christmas, our thought turns first to you. We know full well that your thoughts are of home and your loved ones. We wish to assure you that the people here at home who appreciate the reasons why we are in this war, realize that you are putting your all into this scrap because you are anxious, among other things, that the spirit of Christmas and the right to enjoy a good old-fashioned Christmas shall be preserved through the years which lie ahead. The spirit of Christmas is the Christ. Christ was the gift of God who sent his Son that we might know the way, the truth, and the light, and possess the secret of attaining eternal life. Christ's own life was the perfect example of doing things for others and giving for others. We show the true spirit of Christmas, therefore, when we do for others and give for others. You out there, each of you, wherever you are today, is a living example of this spirit. You are giving loyal, devoted service to your country, and you give it as though you were giving it personally for your loved ones and for your good neighbor around the corner. For this gift from you this Christmas, the hearts of Americans well up with gratitude and pride. Speaking for them, I say, thank you, soldier. Thank you, blue jacket. Thank you, Marine. Thank you, Coast Guard. And what of our gift? What will be our gift to our country at a time like this? What will be our gift to you? With humility, we offer to our country increased devotion, which we hope will be worthy, in some small measure, to be compared with your noble gift to our beloved land. And for you, individually, we offer as a gift a prayer of gratitude for your gift and a prayer that you may be kept safe and be returned home to enjoy with your loved ones and friends many, many Merry Christmases through the years to come. God bless you and grant you the richest and most precious blessings of the Christmas season.
Thank you, Captain Workman. And now, gang, back to your Christmas package, because we've lots of unwrapping to do. Say, here's an item I'm sure you'll say looks mighty fine all decked out in cellophane and holiday tinsel, because she's a favorite item of yours all the year through. And a swell gal she is, Jenny Sims.
Thank you, Linda. Gee, I'm thrilled to be on this Christmas program for all you fighting men. And I want to add my Yuletide greetings to each and every one of you. Maybe I'm too big to fit in your stocking, but I hope this song fits your holiday mood.
from early morn, yeah, we'll hear his horn, rooty toot.
Christmas far away, lift up your head and say, there's gonna be a great day, a great day, a great day.
Well, comes now our Santa Claus for tonight, the man who's been trying to get me on his lap all afternoon to whisper what I want for Christmas, Bob Hope.
Thank you, thank you. Thank you. How do you do, fellas? This is Bob wishing a Merry Christmas to all you United Nations servicemen everywhere, Hope. Speaking for the Americans, the Chinese, the English, and the Rus, saying that as soon as we fry our Christmas turkey, we'll finish cooking Hitler's goose. Well, it's not a big laugh. It's just an opening. But anyways, soldiers everywhere love Christmas because during the holidays, the commanding officers choose certain guys and grant them furloughs. Choose certain guys and grant them furloughs. That's an army expression meaning eeny, meeny, miny, there ain't no mole. And this Christmas, we really got men all over. We got men in more places than Crosby and I build roads to. They're even hanging mistletoe up there in the Aleutians. And you know the Eskimo system of kissing with the noses? I don't mind playing post office, but brother, that's the wrong zone. It's so cold up there, one soldier on Kiska wanted a certain type of sweater for Christmas, but they couldn't get Lana Turner past the postal authorities. And the fellows in the Aleutians really have a lot of unusual weather. I'm not allowed to mention what kind of weather it is, but all I can say is if we had that weather in California, it would freeze almost as many oranges as the weather we have does. And Christmas in London is something, too. They got a blackout there all the time. One private grabbed someone under the mistletoe, and everything was all right until he reached around and felt three chevrons. England is pretty similar to us when it comes to celebrating Christmas, except for that warm beer. That beer is really warm. After two quarts, you can save your burps and rent yourself out as a flamethrower. I heard about one sailor in the Mediterranean area who had an interesting Christmas. He got a card from Dorothy L'Amour with a picture of her in a sarong on it. What a picture. You know how George Washington looked straight ahead on the 2-cent stamp? Well, on this envelope, he kept peeking over his shoulder. In Italy, the soldiers couldn't get any tinsel for their Christmas tree, so they decided to decorate the tree with spaghetti. When they put in the plug, the meatballs lit up. One company over in India had a Christmas dinner, and they ran short of turkey, but nothing stops those GIs. They just started slicing the white meat off the colonel's eagle. And Christmas... Christmas in a lot of places is pretty strange. In Africa, you should see Santa Claus fly through the air in a sleigh pulled by six camels. Boy, those camels, a soldier can't get off them. In order to dismount, you have to go over the hill. And the difference in seasons is really amusing. Christmas time here is cold, and over in the South Sea Islands, it's time for planting. All day long, you can see those girls in the grass skirts rotating their crops. But over on... And over on one South Sea Island, the hula girls played Santa Claus. Instead of their grass skirts, they just wore a long white beard. The first time a bunch of soldiers were ever in favor of GI haircuts for all.
Thank you, Bob Hope. That was swell. And now, men, with a big red ribbon round her waist and a sprig of holly in her hair, meet the girl whose fan mail is stupendous and whose voice is the same, Lena Horne, singing Honeysuckle Rose.
Every honeybee sighs with jealousy when they see you out with me. I don't blame them, goodness knows. Honeysuckle Rose. And when we're passing by, flowers droop and sigh. And I know the reason why. You must free the goodness flows, honeysuckle rose. I don't buy sugar, you just have to touch my cup. You're my sugar, it's sweet when you stir it up. When I'm taking sips from your tasty lips, seems the honey fairly drips. Your confection, goodness knows, honeysuckle rose. If the honeybee sighs with jealousy when they see you out with me, I don't blame you, just goodness knows, you're my honeysuckle rose. When you're passing by, flowers droop and sigh, and I know the reason why. You're my sweetheart, goodness knows, you're my honeysuckle rose. Don't buy sugar, you just have to touch my cup. You're my sugar, dear. Oh, when I'm taking sips from your tasty lips, seems the honey fairly drips. Your confection, goodness knows, you're my honeysuckle rose.
Gee, Nina, that was super. Fellas, there have been an awful lot of Christmas greetings mixed in with the packages we've unwrapped. And now we're happy to return once again to Washington, where General Arnold, Chief of Army Chaplains, is standing by with a warm word of greeting for each and every one of you. Go ahead, Washington, and General Arnold.
Millions of men the world over are gathered around their chaplains in camps, hospitals, battle areas to hear again the story of the first Christmas. Thousands of others in isolated places will open their little volume of the scriptures to read for themselves St. Matthew and St. Luke's account of our Savior's birth in Bethlehem. Men far from their homes and their loved ones will find comfort in meditating upon the hardships and sufferings of the Holy Family. They will see more clearly the real meaning of Christmas and feel more deeply the comfort of God's goodness in sending His Son to live with us and for us. In times of peace and security, we often used our many blessings rather frivolously. Our merriment frequently became revelry. Extravagance and lack of appreciation were more evident than reverence and gratitude. We thought more of our ease and pleasure than of God's goodness and mercy. Many a Christmas came and went without making us better men and women. Now, however, we see Christmas as men of faith and courage saw it 2,000 years ago. The hardships and sufferings of war have cleansed our hearts of pride and vanity, and we have a truer knowledge of the things which really count in life. Prayer and trust in God have a new value for us. Home and the daily association with loved ones are now appreciated as never before. Honest labor, leisure for simple pleasures, and peace with moderate plenty would fill our hearts with real joy. Through the coming of God's Son to share and sweeten our life, we know that we can be happy and joyful despite pain, hardship, and material losses. These are the simple truths which Christmas has been trying to teach us for 20 centuries. Joseph and Mary and Christ himself suffered much to assure us of happiness if we have faith and love and courage. With glowing hearts, therefore, we hear the angel's message. Behold, I bring you good tidings of great joy, for this day is born to you a Savior who is Christ the Lord. Bravely and hopefully, we look up to the Star of Bethlehem and add our voices to the song of the heavenly host. Glory to God in the highest, and on earth, peace to men of goodwill.
Thank you, General Arnold. Once again, gang, back to your Christmas package. And a little digging through the cellophane hereabouts brings up a small item, but potent. It's a round-trip ticket to Wistful Vista, the home of Fibber McGee and Molly. And something tells me we're going to get down there just in time to find Fibber arguing with a little girl who lives down the street.
Hey, I hope somebody gives me a box of cigars for Christmas because I only want... Hey, what goes on here? What are you two whispering about?
She says I better go home, mister.
Huh?
She says you're mad at me because I want to have the kids sing a Christmas carol for you.
Oh, now, I ain't mad exactly, sis.
I bet you are. And, gee, the kids have been out there in that pool all afternoon on account of
that. Now, none of that, sis. Now, cut it out. The only reason I didn't want them to sing is,
it's okay, mister. I know how you feel. Thanks for the cookies and thanks.
Hey, don't rush away like this, sis. My gosh. I'll listen to your old Christmas carol if it means that much.
No.
I just thought...
No, you don't like them.
I do, too, like them. I only
you
thought...
You don't either like them.
I do, too.
You don't.
I do so.
No.
Yes.
No.
Now, look, sis. Here. Take my handkerchief and wipe your nose.
Thanks.
Now, bring in your half-pint glee club and let them do their worst, which I imagine is pretty bad.
Well, they're not bad. They're wonderful.
Okay, so they're terrific. Bring them in.
All right. Hey, Kenny. Ready.
My, my. Well, what handsome little fellas. Hello, boys.
Hello, Mrs. McGee.
What's she going to give us, kids?
The night before Christmas. And, gee, we rehearsed it like 60. Are you ready, sis?
I'm ready, sis. No, wait a minute. Wait a minute. Hey, Molly.
Madam McGee.
Here, take my money and my watch. You know me. Every time I hear these things, I want to give away everything I own.
The night before Christmas and all through the house, not a creature was stirring, not even a mouse. The stockings were hung by the chimney with care, in hope that St. Nicholas soon would be there.
The children were nestled all snug in their wee little bed, while visions of sugar plums danced in their wee little head. Mama in her kerchief and I in my cap had just settled down for a long Christmas night.
So now the alone there arose such a clatter, I sprang from my bed to see what was the matter. Away through the window I blew like a flash, tore open the shutters, blew open the sash.
Then, what to my wondering I should appear but a miniature sleigh and a tiny reindeer. With a little old driver so lively and quick that I knew right away that it must be St. Nick. All bundled in fur from his head to his foot, old Santa was covered with ashes and soot. I drew in my head and was turning around when down the chimney he came with a bow.
His eyes, how they twinkled. His dimples, how merry. His cheeks were like roses.
spoke not a word, but went straight to his work and filled all the stockings.
Oh, boy.
And turned with a jerk. And laying a finger aside of his nose and giving a nod up the chimney he rose. He sprang to his sleigh, to his steam, gave a whistle, and away they all flew like the sound of a pistol. But I heard him exclaim, and he tore out of sight.
Merry Christmas to all, and to all, good times.
Oh, is it gone?
Is the night after Christmas, I'm all through the house. Not a creature is stirring. Not even the mouse. The presents are scattered and broken, I fear. And St. Nicholas won't come again for a year. The children are nestled all warm in their wee little beds. Sugar plums dance in their wee little heads. Mama in her kerchief and I in my cap are settled at last for a long
McGee and Molly. Well, fellas, I guess we've opened the last parcel in the Christmas package. Seems like the only thing left to do is to read the card that came along with it. It's just about the biggest Christmas card you ever saw, and it has millions of signatures on it. It's signed by every mother and father and sister and brother and wife and sweetheart here at home. And it says, "A Merry Christmas to you, and may God speed you to victory."
The special Christmas Day program was presented by the War Department of the United States of America.
Oh, come on, ye faithful, joyful and triumphant. Oh, come ye, oh, come ye to Bethlehem.
Come and behold him, born of King of
Oh, come, let us adore him.
You have been listening to the Old Time Radio Hour broadcast each week over the World Wide Web. You can subscribe at no charge through Apple Podcasts, Podbean, or RSS. Thank you so much for listening. We hope you can join us again next week for another hour of entertainment from the golden age of radio. Until then, this is your host, Justine Ward, saying so long for a while.